But if you make yourself more than just a man, if you devote yourself to an ideal, and if they can't stop you, then you become something else entirely.
Which is?
A legend, Mr. Wayne.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, of flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol. As a symbol, I can be incorruptible. I can be everlasting.
What's it?
Something elemental, something terrifying.
Why bats, Master Wayne?
That's frightening me.
It's time my enemies share my dread.
Another week of Cave of Solitude. I am Daphne J, and here is Eric Anthony and Jay Siegel introducing episode 2. Boys, take it away.
How's it going, Jay Siegel? This is Eric Anthony again, and that was the lovely voice of Daphne J, our third host of the show. She's going to make special appearances from time to time, and she's a very good friend of both of ours, but more specifically, she is my wife. So getting
what?
Into, you didn't know I was married? I didn't
no.
tell you? Oh, okay, yeah, surprise. So getting into this week's episode, a lot has happened since last time we recorded. Have you kept up with the amount of people that have been downloading our podcast?
Last I checked, it was 27.
Yeah, I think we cracked 30. For a day, we were in the top 20 of our subject matter. So it's still a meager podcast, but it's growing. And thanks to Daphne J on her Instagram feed, she's been trying to get the word out too.
Yeah, I saw you repping us.
Hyping it up.
Yeah.
So we're going to get into Pick of the Weeks coming up, but since you're here with us right now, you've been, since the episode, you've been reading a lot of comic books this past week. Did it have anything to do with our podcast?
Yeah, it absolutely did. It kind of inspired me to look into and venture off my comfort zone of just sticking with what I know, what I love.
And what would that be?
Batman.
Okay, so in the past week, since you've read or since you heard our recorded podcast, what have you read? Because you've been reading more than you usually do.
When I heard you guys, you painted this nice, intriguing picture of the new 52 Aquaman, the trench. That was pretty cool.
And what'd you think of it?
I liked it. I was pleasantly surprised with the storyline. I think you guys were right. It was a very easy story to follow. Lots of pictures. Made it easy for me.
It's a comic book. There should be pictures every page.
Well, I mean, with some of the other things you recommended, it's like bubble, 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 bubble.
Yeah, it's not. It wasn't as
verbose. It's a little intimidating.
Yeah.
And when it's not something that you're really into, like if it's not your character, it's hard to try to just pick it up. But this one was pretty easy.
And you moved on to the second book already.
I did.
All right. And you like it so far?
So far.
So far, so good.
So far, so good.
And you even read more, some other Batman trades since we did that too, right? You went back and read some old ones?
I did.
And? Do they still hold up?
Absolutely.
Okay, maybe we'll do a podcast about those ones. We won't spoil it.
I'll be here.
Okay.
Okay.
Very nice. So, getting into the news for this week. Big news coming out of Marvel Studios, Jay. Did you hear about it?
You told me about it.
You didn't look it up?
I don't know.
Not yet? Okay, it's good. We'll get your real reaction. But first and foremost, the Avengers Age of Ultron trailer came out.
I've seen that.
You've seen that. I think everybody's seen that. So what did you think of that?
It looked pretty cool. I like the Hulkbuster.
Yeah.
It looks pretty huge. Big and mighty machines.
Do you know anything about the Age of Ultron, like the history? But I know there's a storyline that they did for it. But I haven't really read anything up on Ultron, so yeah, I'm going into this one. Yeah, I don't
know tons about Ultron either.
What did you think of how he looked?
He looked like evil.
Yeah.
He looked like a bad robot.
I think that's what they're going for.
Yeah. Like Wally.
Like Wally?
No, not like Wally.
Oh, not like Wally. Okay. It looked pretty intense. They're not showing too much of what the story might be, which is okay, because
I prefer that.
Yeah, I like just seeing what it's going to look like. But they're talking about, I mean, obviously it doesn't look like it's just going to be a movie that's in the States this time around, like New York based. It really looks like they're going global with this one, and they're even talking about how they're going to tie it in with Wakanda, the Black Panther.
Oh yeah, I think they're making an appearance. And it was in this trailer that you see, like, some of the Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver, right?
Yeah, they're in it, too. Wicked. Yeah. So that should be interesting, because they're also featured in the X-Men movie on 20th Century Fox. Quicksilver, you didn't see Days of Future Past, right?
No.
Not yet. But Quicksilver is in that. And they have a little young Scarlet Witch in it, too, which is interesting.
Where they were, like, the two kids trapped in, like, the little military container?
That was the Winter Soldier.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That was cool.
Yeah, so speaking of Black Panther, going into the Marvel movie news now, it was announced that a Black Panther movie will be coming out November 3rd, 2017. Yeah. Have you seen the way it's going to look? The costume? What do you think of that?
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You like Black Panther as a character?
Yeah, I don't know tons about him.
Me neither. I just know it's like a king in an African kingdom. Like a very small African kingdom. And he's got these panther powers, but
panther powers.
They're being pretty ambitious with this next phase of Marvel movies. The list, I'll read it off to you and I'll get your reaction for it. So The first one that is going to be, I think they're going for trying to go against the Superman Batman movie, obviously. So they're going to do a Captain America Civil War, and it's been confirmed that Iron Man is going to be in it. What do you think?
I've heard about that one, that it was guaranteed. I saw, like, the little clip where it's them on the farm.
You saw that?
Yeah.
I haven't seen that.
Oh, you should try it. It later. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
I heard
they're, like, chopping logs, and then Captain America just rips one with his hands.
Yeah, it's, like, so getting sweet. The conversation we had earlier tonight, you still don't think that with the Steve Rogers power...
Batman will still win.
I don't know. Just one-on-one combat. You still don't think... If Batman didn't have time to
Batman
plan...
Batman is better trained. He could block and plan, and then just,
he can rip a log with his bare hands.
Yeah, but that's power, not skill. I take skill over power. You clearly take power over skill.
No, I think Captain America is extremely skilled.
Not as skilled as Batman, though.
You don't think? Okay. Well, we'll see. We'll see how the movies go. Maybe,
let's get him a face-off.
Okay, then, following that, November 4th, Doctor Strange, and it's been confirmed that Benedict Cumberbatch, Sherlock Holmes himself, is Doctor Strange.
Yeah, I heard about that one, too.
What do you think of that casting? I think it's perfect for that character.
I always thought Doctor Strange was supposed to be, like, Middle Eastern, though.
Yeah?
I don't know. Because he's got, like, lots of hair on his face and stuff. I don't know. That's just terribly racist. That's not good.
Okay, so for me, personally, I think the casting is good, but I'm probably not going to see Doctor Strange. I'm not into that character that much at all myself. The whole magic and... I don't know, the astral plane stuff. It's not for me, but the casting is good. I think it's definitely going to draw an audience, especially with him playing the part.
For sure.
Guardians of the Galaxy 2, 2007, May 5th. Guardians of the Galaxy 2. I think everybody knew that that would be happening.
Yeah.
How do you think that one's going to tie in?
It's going to be... I have no idea.
Do you think it's going to be like... an Empire Strikes Back type of sequel, where just because I don't know, comparing it to Star Wars maybe isn't fair, but
who's gonna be striking back though? Like Thanos or the Skrull? No, was it the Kree or the Skrull that they were fighting? I forget.
I think it was the I don't remember now, but yeah, maybe with Thanos like striking, because they did win at the end, right?
Take Guardians of the Galaxy, tie this in with whatever whoever they were fighting last time, and then the next phase after, obviously, Infinity War is like insanely like far into the future. What is it, 2019?
2018, just a year later, so it'll tie. Okay, it'll be May, actually.
I would like it if they start tying in like the Skrull more or whatever.
I think it's the Kree.
Through the Guardians of the Galaxy, start setting up the Kree Skrull War, and that be the next Avengers thing after the Infinity War.
So you think
I think that would be cool.
That would be cool.
Yeah,
that would be cool. One of the ones that surprised me actually was later down on the list, but it was Captain Marvel. Miss Marvel. Miss to you. Marvel. You're not going for Captain?
No.
Why?
I don't know. Captain Marvel is in her. She's Miss Marvel. She's been Miss Marvel for like years.
So what's wrong with Captain Marvel?
Because that's not her name. It'd be like, okay, instead of Captain America, we're changing it to Colonel America. No one would go for that.
Yeah, but I think maybe part of the problem was because they couldn't call it Captain Marvel before. Because DC,
established her as Miss Marvel, and they should have just roll left with it as Miss Marvel.
Do you think that that character will have will give Wonder Woman a run for her money? As far as
I always found Carol Danvers annoying in the comics. So.
Yeah, but it's not always the Captain Marvel character always changes, right? It's not always Carol Danvers. I think it changes from time to time. Like I think the current one right now is a teenage girl that happens to be Muslim. So she's the current Captain Marvel. That would make for an interesting movie.
Yeah.
But do you think they're going to go with the classic Carol Danvers?
I have no idea.
Probably should. I think that's probably the best way to start. I know nothing about the Inhumans. How about you?
No, neither do I.
No, neither. But you know what? I'm sure if they did Guardians of the Galaxy, just because I don't know anything about it, I'm pretty sure they know what they're doing tying these in. And I'm not 100%... sure on this, but I think they're going for the Inhumans as their new type of X-Men characters, because Marvel can't do anything with the X-Men making money off of them from the movie franchises.
Yeah.
So they're going to start a new one with the Inhumans. But this Black Panther picture, do you know the actor who's playing it is...
It's a guy from 42.
That's it. I forget his name off the top of my head, but I think he'll be good. And he also played Jackie Brown. Not Jackie Brown. James Brown.
Oh.
James Brown. I'm confused Jackie Robinson. But he played James Brown.
Cool.
So I think their casting is perfect. And Thor. That can't be forgotten. Thor Ragnarok. That I'm excited for, because that was something that I read in the comics from the 80s. Walt Simonson did a very...
Oh, Ragnarok? He's a robot Thor, right?
No. It's like an Asgardian Armageddon type of thing.
Oh.
Yeah. So that'll be pretty... I think that'll be epic. If they do that right, I think it'll be great.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, because it's like a extinction-level event type of issue.
Cool.
I like that. So that's July 28th, 2017. You know what? I was listening to what we recorded about the DC movie news, and we were one of the first I heard talk about it.
Yeah?
Yeah, so we're ahead of the game right now.
Yeah.
All right. So other than that type of news, is there anything else that you can think of that is big news? No?
I feel honest. No.
No,
I don't know.
I can't
anything.
Think. This is the stuff that's really taken over all the website headlines and worth talking about. So, do you think that these movies that they've announced kind of, what's the word, now make people forget about what DC's doing? Like, it's taking the thunder away?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah? Why? Yeah.
Because, I don't know, Marvel has proven itself to be, like, an exciting thing. And this one has, like, a really clear, you can kind of see now where they're going to line movies up and stuff, leading into, like, the Avengers Infinity War. So, like, that's huge. Like, people haven't forgotten about DC, but I think it took a lot of the impact away.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think completely stole the thunder, especially because people's reaction to Guardians of the Galaxy, the first one as a movie, just everybody's on board now.
Yeah.
And
I think like half the people are so excited just because they're making a second one. They're like, yeah, Guardians of the Galaxy 2,
yeah,
sweet.
That movie worked on so many levels, but they've been hinting at all the Infinity gems or stones throughout the movie. Through all the movies, they've been linking them together. So now that they know that there's going to be a big, huge event, and it's a two-part. They're not forcing it.
I like that.
Yeah, I like that too. I like that they're going to make it a two-part. Do you think by that time Captain America will still be in that in those movies, or do you think by then the Steve Rogers character will be taken out during the Civil War?
I didn't think he died in Civil War. No, he doesn't. He gets arrested. That's how... I just know I've read the actual Civil War comic books.
Yeah.
And it ends in, like, the most somewhat anticlimactic way. They're, like, having this big brawl, and then some guy off to the side is like, you superhero guys are dicks.
Yeah.
And then Superman and then Captain America is just like, oh, yeah, we kind of are. All right, take me in, whatever.
Because,
and then it just kind of ends.
Yeah, I know in the I know after that event, shortly after that, he does die in the comics, and Bucky takes over.
Yeah.
But the actor signed on for Bucky, he's in for like 6-7 films signed on for. And I think Chris Evans is only like a few more movies. So I don't know, do you think it'll be the Bucky Captain America in the Avengers? Infinity Wars by that time?
I'm trying to think of how Captain America 2 ended.
There's that scene with Bucky in the museum, remembering
who he is. He's still alive after, yeah, that would seem like how they're probably going to do it then, if they don't have Chris Evans anymore.
And do you think Bucky Barnes, Captain America version, could take out Batman? He's got that steel arm.
Maybe, because... yeah, but the steel arm is an asset then. I'm not getting into this.
Okay, all right, we'll move on to our next section. All right, so pick of the week. What was your pick of the week this week?
Okay. Since I had neglected to think of one beforehand, this is going to be really random and offshoot. EA Sports NHL 2008, the soundtrack to that game. Hey, that soundtrack is wicked. Soft bands. That is the soundtrack that introduced me to my favorite band, Disco Ensemble. And then they have another band called Anne Berlin. Both of those are kind of like European bands, but they're both really good. They have Manchester Orchestra on there, which I really like. And then they have that, like, mandolin, I don't know. But it is a very solid soundtrack.
So the
2008... EA Sports 2008 soundtrack.
You know what? I like the pick. It is very random. It's not what I would have thought. But it's good, because... hey, it's your pick of the week.
I've been playing it a lot lately.
So it's only when you play it. So you haven't upgraded from 2008. You're still stuck in, what is 6 years ago now?
Yeah, I
think we need to get you the 2015.
Nah.
Maybe, no?
Because there's too many little kids that are better at it.
All right.
They beat me online.
So the only way I could listen to this soundtrack is by playing the game.
No, I think you can probably find it places. I don't know.
Piece it together, just see what the track listing
that,
is.
That, or like, I know iTunes used to release the full game soundtracks and
really?
Stuff. Yeah, so you might be able to get it from there.
Alright. I still haven't checked out the pick of the week that you said last time. App.
You try it. It's fun.
Yeah, okay. Now, I'm going to do something different this week. I had a bunch of comics I was going to recommend to read. Maybe I'll save them for another time. But my pick of the week is a television show. And I have to give credit to Daphne J, who... found the show on Netflix, and then she suggested it to me. What's that face?
No, I'm just excited.
Okay, you've seen it with us. You watched it with us, an episode of it, and you guys were laughing when you saw it. It's New Girl. Remember that?
Oh, yeah, that's the one where, like, if you take away her blue contacts, she looks like a completely different person.
Zooey Deschanel, yeah. So I bought Daphne J, my wife, the first two seasons of New Girl, and she's always insisting that I watch it with her, because when she would watch it on her own, I'd hear her laughing hysterically to the point of tears, and I didn't understand what the big deal was. So she finally said, you gotta sit and pay attention to every line, every scene, you can't miss it. So I made an effort to sit and watch a couple of episodes, and I have to admit, it's a great show.
I was
busting my gut.
I watched an episode with you guys.
Yeah,
like,
it was funny. Very, very offshoot, but every line of dialogue has humor in it. You have to have the right sense of humor to watch it, but I recommend Zooey Deschanel's New Girl. I think it's in season 4 now. Yeah, season 4. It's funny. It's really good. So that's my pick of the week. All right, let's get into our subject for this week. I've been excited to get it together. We just finished watching it. Batman Begins. 2005, Christopher Nolan, David S. Goyer, the screenwriter and story. The story was from David S. Goyer, who was also a comic book writer. He wrote Justice Society. And I'm not sure if he did some Justice League, but he was also the writer behind the Blade movies, the Blade Trinity movies. So he had his hand in comic book characters. So 2005, Christopher Nolan, Warner Brothers released Batman Begins. What are your initial memories of this movie when it came out?
Well, I was like 10 years old, so okay. I was terrified.
Okay.
Because it was like a dark movie in a dark, sketchy theater, and it was scary. When his face goes all like black and he's gushing out the goo stuff from his mouth.
The scarecrow scene?
Yeah, pretty nasty. Arkham.
Yeah, that freaked me out too, and I wasn't 10 when I saw it. I was pretty freaked out myself. What was your... Prior to that movie, what was your... when you thought of Batman, was it different from that movie? Was it something... Was it like an animated show or the previous movies when you would think of Batman? Because I don't imagine you had big comic book collection at that time.
I don't know. I never paid tons of attention to Batman. You always know who he was.
Mm-hmm.
But like... I don't even think I was watching, like, any TV shows with him at the time. It was just Batman.
He was just there.
Yeah, he was just there.
Okay. Got it. For me, this was... See, I was 5 or 6 years old when the original Batman came out, the 1989. And that was huge mania back then for a comic book movie. But something that big to come out, everybody was into it. So I had seen all of the rise and fall of the Batman movie franchise. And the last movie memory that we had was Batman and Robin. You've seen that?
Yeah.
Absolutely horrible.
I liked it.
From where it started, though, where it started with the Michael Keaton, Jack Nicholson Batman to where it ended was extremely different.
Yeah.
So when this had been announced and you saw posters and pictures of the cast and what was happening, I didn't know what to expect. But the more it got closer, you realize that these guys were doing... I thought this was going to be a legitimate Batman movie, sticking close to the source material. And I have to say, this was... When this movie came out, for me, this was the movie that brought me back into collecting comic books. I left that theater and I said, whatever that was, that's what Batman should be. And I went back to the comic book shop and I started reading Batman. And I think the first book I bought after that movie was Hush. You've read that, right?
Yeah.
So after you see Batman Begins and you read a book like Hush, I was in completely. Fell down the rabbit hole and back into comic books. So when this had originally come out, I had it written down here. It was around I think it had come out after Spider-Man 2 and the X-Men had all released. And it was the first major DC movie to be relaunched. And it had a $150 million budget, but at the time, worldwide, it only made, but considering what superhero movies do now, it only made $374 million at the time. What are your thoughts on the movie now, looking back? Where does this movie
stand? I get why it didn't make tons of money, because, like, granted, I wasn't, like, paying tons of attention, obviously, when it came out. But I don't remember it being, like, a huge, big deal, hearing about this Batman movie. Like, I don't remember lots of, like now when you hear, like, Marvel has made an announcement, people go, like, nuts. It's all over everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, it makes sense that it didn't make that much. Looking back, though, it's definitely, like, still one of the best superhero movies to be released.
I think this was, for me, the movie that... had to legitimize this genre of movies again. I mean, the X-Men had been successful and Spider-Man had done great business for sure, but I still think that there were movies that had to stay campy in a way. Anyways, with the Spider-Man movies, those ones were still kind of silly.
The X-Men was really good.
X-Men was really good, but for a DC movie,
yeah.
And for a character of the stature of Batman to, after it had failed so bad prior to to come back out and to reestablish itself. I think this movie, the way Guardians of the Galaxy, I think I said last time, is the influential movie to bring all of these, this genre of movies, make it cosmic or make it a bigger universe. I think if it wasn't for what Batman Begins did as a movie, storytelling wise, I don't know if there'd be any other ones the way they are today.
I think Marvel would have pushed, especially when it got bought by Disney.
I think they would have made them, but I don't know if they would have made, like, the way they did Iron Man, the first Iron Man. I found it to be very in the same vein as Batman
Begins. Like, they tried to keep it in somewhat of a real world?
Keep it in a real world, kind of non-linear storytelling, and origin.
It seems like they've had most of all these, like, storyline, like, planned out for a really long time. Like, the after-credits clip of, like, either the first or second... after the first Iron Man is Nick Fury walking in.
Yeah.
So, like, I think they still would have been pretty on track.
Yeah? Yeah. You don't think that Batman Begins played an influential role in the way that they would go on to make these type of movies?
I don't think so, because Batman Begins is, like, a really realistic world, darker theme. Marvel has never really been about that.
No, I think that's the one area where they said, okay, let's not make our movie so dark. Let's give it some levity.
Yeah.
But as far as the way that they would tell a story and, you know, kind of stick to the source material and keep it somewhat, I don't want to say, like, legitimate, because we're talking about comic book movies.
Oh, like sticking to the comic book.
Just the way that they would make it. Like, when you think back to Batman Begins, let's talk about the movie for a minute before we compare it to all the other ones. Where does this one rank for you in the trilogy that Nolan made?
I think this is probably my second favorite. Dark Knight first, then this one. I think Dark Knight Rises. I still love Dark Knight Rises, but mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what are some of the things about this movie that you personally like?
I like the world that they're in. All the different sets they create. I mentioned to you before that when I first saw the movie, I loved the ice scene. Just, like, that whole element of, like, I don't know where he's supposed to be.
Somewhere in Tibet, right?
I don't know.
You don't know? That's your favorite scene, too, right? Yeah. Daphne J? Mm-hmm. That's my wife's favorite scene. She absolutely loves it. But what's interesting about that is you hear the popping in the background when they're on the ice. There's that cracking sound. The ice was literally cracking while they filmed it. Huh. That was real. That wasn't like sound effects.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So
they had like not scuba divers, but like emergency crew and stuff in case anyone fell through the ice and stuff, right? Because it was a real location that they were at.
Yeah, I think so. If you didn't hear that, Daphne J just said that they had people on the sides just in case one of them should fall in. Emergency crew to resuscitate them or to rescue them because it was an actual dangerous situation. But when you think of that now, it makes it so much more of a powerful scene.
Yeah.
So the first act, you find Bruce falling into a well, establishing his phobia to bats. And the first, they don't say it yet, but it switches scenes right into him being in prison.
Yeah.
Did you find that confusing to follow at first, the way they were telling this story?
I can't remember anything about seeing it at first. When I remember watching it, like, before. Mm-hmm. No. Like, the flashbacks, I thought, were fairly...
Easy to follow.
Yeah, it's established that already that... Like, I already knew Christian Bale was Batman. So then you see him, and you're like, okay, yeah, that's the same person. This is just, like, a flash forward. That was a flashback. And then it was like a dream or something. Food's done.
Yeah. I remember watching it the first time and thinking, I wasn't sure how they were going to tell the story because of all the scenes that you saw in the trailer. You didn't know which way how long this movie was going to be. But the non-linear style of flashing back and forward was, I thought, a perfect way to do it. And I like the amount of time you get to see young Bruce Wayne with his family. It wasn't something that you had ever seen before. Like, you always see Thomas and Martha get shot and the pearls fall, but you never actually see him interact or speak to his dad too much.
Yeah.
And I really, really like that. And then seeing him in prison, the one departure that they quickly made from the comic books was introducing him to Ducard, who, spoilers ahead of time, is played by Liam Neeson, who's also Ra's al Ghul. What did you think of that mentorship between the two of them? Did you know that he was going to be Ra's al Ghul? Did you have any suspicion? Well, again, you're 10. You probably didn't even care.
I was barely following. Like I said, when I had watched it then, after I was 10, it made sense, because from what I knew of Ra's al Ghul, he wasn't supposed to look like that. I was just going strictly off looks. So then, yeah, Liam Neeson looks more like the kind of, like, middle-aged type of man that Ra's was supposed to look like. So that's where I took it from, I guess.
Yeah. I didn't expect it at first, but after looking back, watching it, it's so obvious and it's perfect. Like, he looks and really captures that character of Ra's al Ghul.
Yeah, very, like, eloquent.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. And the way that he appeals to Bruce when he's in that prison to teach him what he says to him to convince him to take the mentorship, say you can become a legend. And Bruce was on this, this trek in life to try to find himself and figure out a way to understand that criminal element. And then when you see him getting trained in the next upcoming sequences, I think it's not anything you've ever seen or read in a Batman comic book up to this time. I mean, you get hints of it, that he travels the world and picks up a little bit of this and that and kind of combines it all. But to see him actually be trained, and to be trained by Ra's al Ghul, I thought was amazing. Because later on, you know that their storytelling, or their story of them having that father-son relationship but being bitter rivals and enemies, it means so much more to know that he was also the man who trained you. I thought that was a perfect addition to the mythology. And the one-liners in this movie, not the one-liners, but the phrases that always come back.
Yeah.
What are some of the ones that you like to...
Oh, what was the best one, Morgan, for "Didn't you get the memo?" It was the best.
Yeah, that was a good one. I like... I'm not such a humorous note, but I like the "Why do we fall, Bruce?" or "Why do we fall, Master Wayne?"
Oh, you went full serious.
Yeah, I went full serious because I'm trying to go in order so I don't get lost. But when his father says that, and it's repeated throughout the movie, yeah. I love that line. "Why do we fall, Master Wayne, to pick ourselves back up?" And it keeps recurring. And at the end, when Alfred says that line again to him,
yeah,
I love that line. It's like that relationship between the two of them. I think there would be absolutely no Batman if there wasn't Alfred. He doesn't get the credit, I think, sometimes that he deserves. But that relation, that love that he shows to him,
yeah,
is amazing. And they went with the Joe Chill. They actually mentioned that it was Joe Chill that killed the parents. That's like the old comic book version as well. They changed that a little bit, I think, in before the New 52, they never had named who the killer was, because they figured if Batman had found the person who had done this, there'd be no point to him anymore. That would be like his that's the whole point of him becoming Batman, this search.
Yeah.
But they actually name him, and he's dealt with and put in jail. What did you think of that character, Joe Chill? He was just like a regular mugger. What was your description of him?
I feel like you led me into the trap of what I said during the movie.
Oh, no, you know, I didn't think of that.
I had said that he looked like the human embodiment of, like, an old Bugs Bunny. But anyways, what did I think of Joe Chill? I don't know. He looked like a guy.
Would you have preferred it to be just like a regular mugger? Like a no-named regular mugger? Did you like
no,
the fact
I
that
like
they made
the
it?
The way it led in. Like, he's going to go and kill, shoot him at the thing. He came home from Princeton. And then he's going to go shoot him. And then he doesn't. He sees him get shot. And then that's why then Rachel takes him downtown. That's when he talks to Falcone. And then that's what kind of pushes him. And you see him, like, run to the boat. He's going to go travel abroad. So I thought that sequence was really good.
I like the thread that they used to keep him in it. Yeah, and I like that they referred to it. It's one of those little things to keep it. Changed it. Because they kill him off by having that that little female assassin come through and say Falcone says hi. But I like the thread that how he ends up meeting Falcone. And Gary Oldman, key character, Commissioner Gordon. Mm-hmm. First appearance, you see him put the coat on young Bruce Wayne. What did you think of you thought young Bruce Wayne is cute? So what did you think of old Gary Oldman?
He's cute too.
You think he's cute too?
No, he made a really good Commissioner Gordon throughout the entire trilogy.
Mm-hmm. I like awesome. How they show that scene at the end of Dark Knight Rises to tie it back in.
Yeah, that was really good.
Yeah, that. What do you think the impact would have been, or they were trying to go for, to have Commissioner Gordon be introduced that way? Because they make it a common theme up until the end of Dark Knight Rises, right? That initial meeting.
Shows because they obviously have some type of relationship between each other.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's, I don't know, I'd never thought about it. That's because Bruce Wayne obviously has respect for Commissioner Gordon. Maybe it started from that point.
Yeah.
And because in the comics, I know Batman is supposed to have followed Commissioner Gordon, or Jim Gordon's career. That's why he knows he's a good straight cop. Or whatever, so yeah, now he followed him because he was the one that, was actually nice to him, put the coat around him, and stuff.
No, but what are you laughing at?
No.
It's true, though. I think it's definitely, like you said before, world building, right?
Yeah.
Making this guy, for a person who has lost his parents, Bruce Wayne has so many father figures. When you think about it, he's got Commissioner Gordon, he's got Alfred. He's got Lucius Fox, Morgan Freeman.
Has Ra's al Ghul.
Exactly, that's a good point. He even has Ra's al Ghul. So for an orphan, he's got a lot of surrogate fathers, which I think is an interesting thing that they do in the movies, introducing these guys to have pivotal roles in his life. And getting back to my favorite portion of this movie is definitely before he becomes Batman. I know some people get tired of origin stories, but in this case, because it had never really been shown before... Some of the things I really liked was those things that Ra's al Ghul says to him. Theatricality and deception are powerful agents or weapons. That you have to be more than an opponent to your enemy. You have to be an ideal or an idea. And that's a perfect way to look at Batman. Of why, because he could just be a ninja, basically, right? But for him to be shown all of these different tricks, to be more than that, really adds to the lore. And the gauntlets that you see that they in the ice fight, you see that they're wearing the gauntlets.
Yeah.
So it's not just a silly part of a costume to go with the bat motif or something. It's actually serving a purpose. I like those points.
Yeah, and he actually uses them multiple times in the movie.
Yeah. And at the end they have the scene on the train where he says the same old tricks. They refer back to the gauntlets. I like that part. And then we go back to the scene now where I think it's the flashback with Rachel and him in the car when he goes down into the Narrows, and he originally meets Falcone, and his Bruce Wayne's original mission was to kill Joe Chill. He has a strong sense of justice. Revenge and justice to him still mean the same thing.
Yeah.
And then it flashes forward because he realizes at that point that from what Rachel says to him has a huge impact we see later on. She says how his parents would be ashamed of the person he's become. And that motivates him now to go and find himself, to see his real purpose, how he can make a difference after he meets Falcone.
Yeah.
So then it flashes forward to when he's being trained by the League of Shadows. It's called League of Shadows, not Assassins in this movie. I always confuse it. And his final test would be to become an official executioner.
Yeah, he has to kill Steve.
Who's Steve?
He's that guy. He's the farmer that killed his friend or whatever. Steve.
We've named him Steve?
Yeah, Steve or Dunghua.
Oh. Okay. So Steve. And he refuses to do it now at this moment. He's got a change of heart after he's been trained by Ra's al Ghul. And Ra's says to him, compassion is an emotion your enemy will not share. And Bruce says that's what separates us from them.
Yeah.
Big key moment.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think of that scene where he makes that final decision?
Oh, that's what makes Batman Batman.
Yeah.
It's why he doesn't kill the Joker after so much time. Because then they even touch on it in The Dark Knight. He's and you just can't kill me out of some sense of justice or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what Batman is.
You said something interesting, though, when we watched the movie, because he refused to kill the farmer named Steve.
But yeah, then he blows up their whole headquarters, and you see countless of them being, like, crushed by the falling wood. So it's like, I'm not going to kill you directly, but I will blow your house up on top of you. But it goes then to the Ra's al Ghul thing, where he's like, I won't kill you directly, but I'm also not going to save you directly, so he leaves it up to them to escape. And he's just like, oh, whatever.
That's the one thing, jumping forward, I don't want to get to the end, but that's the one thing I kind of have a problem with. I don't think Batman would ever say that to somebody. I know that's what they did in the movie, and that's fine, but I think, like, the... If you're going to stick to the characteristics of Batman, he would never say, well, I don't have to save you. That's the one thing he's almost always has to do. That's one of his weaknesses, is his... Even if the person's wrong, he can't let them die. They've got to pay for what they've done properly.
Yeah.
But besides that, getting back to that scene where he blows up Ra's al Ghul's home, mm-hmm. I love the part where the place explodes and Liam Neeson's going down that hill and Bruce...
Oh, he, like, dislocates his arm.
Oh, man, yeah. That scene. But everything about it, like, nothing about this movie, even in seeing the special features, they've tried to eliminate all CGI. I mean, I'm sure there's still plenty of it in there, but the physicality of it, you can really see it, especially in that scene.
Yeah.
And when he grabs him and you see him just hook the gauntlet, again, using the gauntlet for, like, a
yeah.
actual purpose. I love that scene. It's great. And then he heads back to Gotham. Alfred picks him up. I don't know how he contacts Alfred. I've always wondered how he does this. They never explain it in the movie, but Alfred shows up.
Payphone.
Just a payphone? He's Bruce Wayne.
Yeah, he needs a quarter.
That's it. That's true. He's Bruce Wayne. Batman. He can do anything.
Alfred, help me. Sorry, that's jumping ahead again.
It's okay. I like your Batman voice. So, when Alfred picks him up and they're on the private jet, he gives his mission statement to Alfred at that point. He tells him that a symbol can be everlasting. If I can become a symbol, then I can make a real difference. Something elemental, something terrifying. I like that.
Yeah.
And he, as he heads back home... And
he actually says terrifying there?
Yeah, something terrifying.
I didn't catch that. That's good.
Yeah, I like that. And he's already thinking that I can't just be a one man. People can't know me as Bruce Wayne. I'm not going to make a difference. And I think that's the moment where he's put on the Bruce Wayne mask. People often talk about how Batman's the real mask and Bruce Wayne is the secret identity he uses in public. I think that's the moment where he realizes he's got to do that. And then it leads into him putting together putting together his little armory, figuring out ways to...
Yeah, he goes into Wayne Enterprises, gets a job with Lucius, and then he finds all his convenient equipment.
But I love the fact that everything they give him, they explain
used for, like, military, and then why it wasn't actually used for the military.
Yeah, I love that about this film, because all the other ones, you see him, like...
Like all these gadgets, but it's like, where did you get that?
Yeah. And that's the part of Batman, I think, that becomes hard to handle when you
guys... I'd like to see the origin of Green Arrow's boxing glove arrow. So off topic.
That's okay, yeah. But it's true, though, right? When you see where these things actually come from and their usefulness, like the whole tie-in with Lucius Fox and the R&D department, I think it's a perfect way to explain how he puts stuff together.
Even the whole military explanation behind the tumbler.
Yeah.
It's wicked.
Yeah, exactly. And what becomes his cape, he realizes through trial and error that he needs to have a cape. It's not just, again, something that put on...
Major error, slamming into, like, the emergency fire escape.
Because everyone always says, like, a cape is so stupid on superheroes, they shouldn't wear capes, right? But in this case, and that actual technology of that fiber getting, with the gloves, getting rigid, that was actually a technology that the government was trying to put together. It was in the special features. They said that's where it was inspired from.
That's crazy.
So it wasn't just something they made up for the movie. I like that. But when he finally realizes to become a bat, that is my absolute favorite, probably my favorite scene in all of the comic book movies. that moment right there.
I would have preferred when it, like, if they had done it actually in the comic, like, because in the comic books, it's that he's sitting in his thing, sitting, staring at his father's portrait, and the bat smashes in the window.
Yeah.
Here, they just have it flying in the corner. I would have preferred the dramatic smash in the window. A little cheesy, but, like,
no,
awesome.
I think everybody would have preferred that.
Yeah.
But what they went with, because they've dealt so much with bats being his phobia, and he's got this huge fear towards bats. They even make that one of the reasons his family leave the opera, right? He's having a flashback.
The opera was terrifying.
Yeah, he's terrified of the opera. They leave the opera, and that's when they encounter Joe Chill. So he's always dealing with this guilt of his fear.
Mm-hmm.
So then for him to actually go into that cave again, and it's not just like a couple of bats. He's swarmed by this family of bats, like thousands of them. And that the music, the score in this movie, what did you think of the score?
It was so good.
Yeah. It's so simple, because I don't know if you remember the Danny Elfman score from the original Batman that's like extremely famous and popular. They reuse it in the video games and everything. That one's great. I love that. But this one here is so simple, but so...
it's like really epic.
Yeah, and elemental. Like,
yeah, it's really good.
It really just gets... It strikes that that chord in you, that nerve, that you just feel whatever's happening around him when he rises with the bats.
And it adds a lot to, like, the darkness of the movie.
Yes.
The, like, three descending notes, the dun-dun-dun.
Yeah.
That thing. That's, like, wicked.
Yeah. So that scene there with the bats is my absolute favorite in the trilogy. And that's when you see him become... he embraces it.
Yeah.
He embraces his fear and becomes a Batman.
I was actually paying attention to his face when they showed it. Yeah, you totally see him. He's like... he kind of like almost bites his lip. He's just like, okay, just do this.
Yeah. And he just totally embraces it. I love that part. So we talked about putting together the bat suit, all the practical elements of it, and the... it's a lot of it's based on real technology. And something interesting about the Tumblr that we were talking about during the movie, and a friend had pointed this out to me, was there's those scenes when he has the car chase with the Tumblr. This is jumping ahead again. But he's going on the rooftops, and I always thought that was kind of ridiculous that Batman would just drive on rooftops and not worry about this huge 200-ton car, whatever it weighs, to fall through. But you actually see a screen image in the Tumblr. Did you notice it?
I remember seeing it now that you mention it.
Okay.
Like the yellow grid.
Yeah. That shows what rooftops could handle the weight of the car. And if you see him on that initial rooftop, he's about to jump off of it, but then he spins around and goes in opposite direction because that's the rooftop that would handle the weight. I love those points of... because all the things that you would think, like, oh, that's so cheesy, that's a plot hole, like, how could he just do that? They deal with it in the movie. And it is, okay, yeah, it's cheesy and fantastic that he can drive on top of a roof, but...
No, I like that. I'm just thinking, man, like, what type of computer scans rooftops and is like, this one can handle that much weight, I know, because math.
The Tumblr.
Yeah, I guess so.
Right? And you know what? I appreciate the fact that this isn't a Batman where they make him be so super, super intelligent where he just figures out everything on his own. He builds a Batmobile, and he builds this, and he does that.
He's using outside resources and stuff.
Yeah, he realizes that, okay, there's someone who specializes in doing this. I'm going to go to that person for help.
Yeah.
And it's Lucius Fox, which I think is the best way to go about it in any Batman story. Using Lucius Fox in that capacity is perfect. One thing that happens in this movie that you don't realize it's done so well, and in other superhero movies when they do it, it's horrible, is the amount of villains. Did you count how many Batman villains were in the Dark Knight, Dark Knight Rises, but in this one particularly? Can you think of them?
Scarecrow, Ra's, then like Falcone.
Yeah.
So like four.
Four. Whenever they put three... or cool. Two, we're always like, there's too many.
Have you ever seen the chart of, like, the rule of supervillains movie ratio? When
no.
It's one, it's, like, knowledgeable, smart, intelligent. When it's, like, two, they're half the, like, intelligence. Three, it's, like, thing. And then when you hit four, it's just, like, they're basically toddlers.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Well, you look back at Batman Begins, or it's not Batman Begins, sorry, Batman and Robin, and they had Poison Ivy and Mr. Freeze, and then the worst possible Bane iteration you can imagine, and it was just retarded. And then you look at Spider-Man.
I would take Bane over Mr. Freeze, though. Mr. Freeze. Imagine spending a full day with him and those puns. Chill.
Oh, all just the shoot puns me now. In that movie.
Shoot me now.
Every line in that movie is horrible.
Oh, George Clooney.
Oh, man. And the way he refers to Robin, like his actual name.
He pulls out the bat visa.
Oh, please don't remind me. Getting back to a good Batman movie. Yeah, so there's four villains, and you would think someone like Zsasz, you don't almost realize he's in it, but yeah. He has numerous appearances, and he doesn't play a major role, for people who are wondering. He's the guy in the first scene with Cillian Murphy, the Scarecrow, who he's defending him in court, but he also shows up at the end of the movie when Rachel Dawes is protecting the child, and Batman deals with him there. So they do it in such a subtle way, but all perfectly placed.
Just the way the villains interact with each other. You see that it's Scarecrow working for him, and he thinks that it's one plan. Meanwhile, Ra's has a completely different plan, so he's conning him. And then how Carmine is being used to push the drugs in, but he doesn't know the full picture. And the way they interact is wicked.
Yeah, and every character, I feel, gets their just due in where they fit into the Batman mythology. Carmine Falcone is a major crime lord. You see him in Gotham now. You see the major role he plays, but they do him justice in this movie. Great actor portraying him. Ra's al Ghul obviously is a theme throughout the Nolanverse. He has an effect in all of the movies of Batman's psyche and everything. And then Scarecrow, too, is in all three Batman movies. He's in Dark Knight at the beginning.
Oh, yeah, and then he's
in the court.
The court in the last one.
Yeah, so, and they're portrayed exactly the way they should be. What did you think of the Scarecrow not being stuffed with, the hay and...
Lame. Should have been stuffed with hay.
You like that better?
No.
I liked
it was an interesting element that he was a psychologist, one of those, for Arkham Asylum.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
Yeah. And I like that they even let him put the burlap sack on. They go with all of that.
But, it has a reason. Because of the fear gas, that's why you'd put on a thing. Because, a normal face might not be as scary. But when he puts the mask on with the fear gas, it's Scarecrow.
Yeah. That's cool. Yeah. No, it was great. So, the first appearance of Batman, when he shows up in the movie, what did you think of it?
What are you counting as the first appearance? When he's with Commissioner Gordon or on the docks?
When he's on the docks, when he's in full Batman.
Now that is my favorite scene.
Yeah?
Yeah. From the start, so Batman-esque, when the guy goes, opens the crate and he gets pulled in.
Yeah.
That's so sweet, and then where are you? Here. So good.
But even that, when they first look up and they see him perched like a bat and he comes down and grabs him.
That's a bit cheesy, but still very cool.
Cheesy? Really? I thought it was wicked.
You think Batman's gonna be wrapped up in his just looking down at them?
Because
it's Might as well screech as he's coming down.
Because it's the whole theatricality, right?
Yeah.
It's to make people not know whether he's human or not.
Yeah.
I thought that was perfect. And the fighting style that they use, what did you think of the fact that first time he fights all of those guys, that you don't really see him do every move? I thought it was great. Did you notice, it's very... not Jason Bourne-esque, but you kind of see that he's fighting them, but you don't see every single move.
Oh, yeah. You don't see the whole fight. It's kind of just clips of it, and then all of a sudden it's one guy down, two guys down, and the whole group is just
I think that's perfect. That's how Batman would fight, and that's how you should see it. Not really knowing every single move he makes, but knowing that he's there.
Yeah.
I thought that was perfect. And that when he grabs Falcone out of the car... You want to do the voice? What's the first thing he says to him? And Daphne J pointed out that one of her favorite things is when Falcone's on the
tied
to the spotlight, making the bat symbol. I thought that was awesome. And that next scene where he's perched as a gargoyle, perfect.
Yeah,
I love that they add that in there, and you get that
all the
panoramic scene.
Yeah,
when he's
just perched.
Perfect.
Awesome.
Yeah, I love it. And they do that a couple times where he's just hanging onto the side of a building, you see the cape billowing,
yeah.
or it's in the rain, and you see him, like, the physicality of what he's doing, going back to that again, climbing up the building, thought it was great. What did you think of the Tumbler itself? We talked about it a little bit, in comparison to other Batmobiles.
Because it's following the same whole theme of, like, okay, what if Batman could actually exist, and that would be the Batmobile if it actually exists. It wouldn't have the massive 4-foot fin with, like, the giant exhost pipes shooting out of the back.
That looks cool. That's
awesome. It
looks
cool, but that's not what the Batmobile would be if you were doing a real-life Batman.
Do you remember when we saw it at Comic-Con? Or
yeah.
that cheesy Comic-Con we went to? It was awesome to
it's
see
awesome,
it there, but you look at that car, and
yeah.
you're like, this
Imagine
can even
like
hop a curb.
This version of Batman pulling up in that. No, you can't.
No.
It would be so cheesy, it'd be ridiculous.
Yeah, no.
Imagine a whole Joker scene... And he's in the big, long, red stripe, like, like, no.
But you can't even hop a curve with that old car. This one here, you literally see it going over, like, crushing cop cars.
Yeah.
It's so much more... And I think it's very, not exactly, but it's very reminiscent of, like, Dark Knight Returns, that tank type of style of car. You remember in The Dark Knight Returns where he's literally in a tank and he's about to fight the mutant? Not in Rises. Dark Knight Returns, the comic book.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's so much more menacing and huge.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Like, it actually can run over other vehicles. Like, that's where I feel like this was inspired from, in a way. I found it more reminiscent of that. Okay, so anything that we're leaving out that you can think we can go to next? What are we... We've talked about all of the tech. We've talked about... him being trained, his first appearances as Batman, the final scenes, that final big, huge, when he's against Ra's al Ghul for the final time, when he, at his party, his birthday party.
Oh, that scene? That scene's good.
What did you think of that reveal? Looking back now, not as a 10-year-old, but looking back now, when you see Ra's al Ghul be revealed, does it make all the sense now as you watch the movie?
I like that it's not a big dramatic thing. I respect them for that. It's not a dramatic reveal. You can see it shakes Bruce Wayne visibly in the party. He kind of turns, he's like, oh my goodness. But that it's not some big, like, villainous monologue. That it is. He does a very quick clean. He's like, I'd like you to meet Ra's al Ghul. And then he turns like, you're not Ra's al Ghul. I saw him die. And then real Ra's al Ghul is behind him. I like that. That is like a very clean reveal.
Yeah, it's not some shocking thing at the end of the movie that you put together. And it's like, oh, all that time. Wow, that's amazing. One thing I'm forgetting to mention that is key to this movie is the... going back to some of his first appearances when he gets Flass on the bat rope and he lifts him up and he gives him the where are the other drugs going?
Yeah.
And he gives him the swear to me.
That's the best line. Best
Amazing.
Line of the movie.
Amazing.
That wet falafel though.
You come in talking about a wet falafel.
Bothers me so much. No, it does. It does. I'm glad she brought it up. Okay. He buys it. Well, he doesn't buy the falafel, he steals it, then he walks out into like this torrential downpour, like someone look out for Noah's Ark, it's coming down so hard, and he walks out to fresh falafel waste. That thing would be soggy in a second.
It is a waste of a good falafel.
He deserved to be strung up. Batman should have left him there, been like, think about what you did.
He ruined a good, perfectly good falafel.
Yeah.
What did you think in this movie of the Bale voice? Because everyone always makes fun of the Christian Bale Batman voice. I thought in this movie personally it wasn't that
people
bad.
People make fun of it?
Oh yeah, people say
what?
That
all the time.
I love it.
People
it's
always
my
say
favorite
that
it's because it's the most realistic. He's not going to be able to walk around with some soft, pretty boy voice. Like,
no, I agree.
Hi, how are you? Here's my checkbook. Like, no.
I agree. I think in the movies that came after, it was a little overdone sometimes. But in this one, I feel it was the perfect balance of like a gruff whisper as opposed to except for the times where he's speaking to Flass and he's trying to scare him. I think it's perfectly fine that he uses that voice. But I don't think it's as strong in this movie as it was in Dark Knight, Dark Knight Rises.
My thing is, this is a quieter movie. He's not really yelling at people. Think about the other ones. He's yelling at a lot of people when he's talking and stuff. And, like, it would make sense for it to sound overdone. Obviously, he's putting on this voice for stuff. Then he gets into these stressful situations. It's just coming out however it can. It's going to sound overdone, I think. I thought that was like, no, I loved it. I love the voice through all of it.
I don't mind the Christian Bale Batman voice, but other people make fun of it, especially when he's like...
Well, if I meet them, I will shame them.
Yeah? With your Batman voice.
Yeah.
What would you say to them?
I'd say, tell them to swear to me.
Okay. And then the other, there was another scene. Oh, when he rescues Rachel Dawes from the Arkham after she's been poisoned by the fear gas.
Yeah.
There's that scene with when he calls for backup. With the when he gives the calls for the bats to come through.
Oh, yeah.
For distraction. I loved it. The straight out of year one, Batman year one, that scene. Mm-hmm. Perfect adaptation. It was perfect. So getting back, okay, let's jump forward again. We're going back and forth a little bit. That's okay. It's our show. When Ra's al Ghul makes his appearance again, and Alfred rescues Batman, and he's back to his... that scene, I don't know, that scene just touches me. We're in that elevator, and they at the bottom, and he's got... I don't know if it's a stab wound or he's bleeding, but Alfred gives him that line, like, I'm never going to give up on you.
Yeah.
Again, I don't know where Batman would be without Alfred. He's the unsung hero in all of these... in all the Batman stories. So what did you think of that final climatic battle? When they're going through Gotham, what the whole plot was to make Gotham destroy itself. Because that's the theme in
I like the way
Dark Knight Rises too, right?
Broke it down. Like the way they subtly did it. Like, oh, this piece of technology is stolen. Hey, there's an extra drug in it. Then you see him, Scarecrow reveal it, that they're dumping. You see them dumping stuff, but they don't actually say what they're dumping. It's only after when Commissioner Gordon that they do the full, like, kind of, oh, they were dumping the drug. But even then, you're still like, wait, why into the water? It has to be a vapor. And then you finally tie everything together. I like that everything was kind of connected there. And I think that did a really good job in pulling all the villains together, too.
Yeah.
That was sweet.
I think this Nolan Batman movie, out of all three, ties everything together the best. Because it's done in... there's simple little side plots that are going on, but they all tie in very neatly.
Yeah.
And they include...
everything relates to everything else.
Yeah, without it... really without you, wasted, yeah. Yeah, without something being like, well, what about that thing? Where did that thing go? I thought that was perfectly done with this movie. And that last train scene, that fight sequence with him and Ra's.
Only thing I could have done better,
yeah,
is if he didn't say you never learn to mind your surroundings. That made it cheesy. It
why?
Like, because the whole movie, they're just throwing lines back in the face. I don't know.
You
leave
know,
that one out. Should have left that one out.
But it was perfect that it was coming from Batman this time.
Yeah, but at the same time, they're fighting on a train, and like he just blew up the tracks. That has nothing to do with it. I don't know. Whatever.
Well, he didn't realize that the tracks were gone. That was his big ace
yeah.
in the hole, right?
Yeah.
But this movie, the one thing, the only criticism I can say is that they go through the entire movie making Bruce Wayne this person who can't or won't kill. And they keep driving this point home that it's wrong for him to kill and not to save people. And then at the end, he just drops that line. Like, everything that has been built up in this movie, like, I'm not... because Ra's al Ghul even says, oh, you finally have built up the
well, then
the
technically the League of Shadows thing should bother you, too.
What? With the... when
yeah.
he blows up...
because the whole principle behind it is he's not willing to kill someone directly. Think of in Dark Knight Rises. He tackles Two-Face. If you push someone off a building, that's murder. He tackles Two-Face off a building.
But he's...
Two-Face
he's,
dies.
He's trying to save... he didn't... Two-Face didn't fall. He was holding him by the hand. Two-Face slipped out of his hand. Didn't he?
No, the boy. The boy is who he catches. He didn't try and save Two-Face.
Yeah, see, but see, I have a problem with that too then.
There you go. Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. He doesn't have a problem with killing someone indirectly.
That yeah, and that's...
he's going to blow up your house, he's going to blow up the train, and he's not going to save you.
That's,
yeah.
See, that's a writer's thing, right? That's
yeah.
David S. Goyer's writing, because he does the same thing with Superman in Man of Steel. I don't have a problem with them going to a certain place with the story, but if you're building it up that this person is never going to do this, never going to do this, but you make them do it in roundabout ways, everything you've built up to, it kind of, I don't know, ruins all of that for me. Because Batman, I don't think after a movie of him saying, I'm not going to kill, I can't be an executioner, I don't think he would ever just let the person die. Unless it was, we both have to jump out of this thing. And, you know, I have to jump for myself and you've got to jump for yourself.
That's I think that's what he was leaving Tarish. He was like, you can try and barrel roll out of here if you want. I don't know.
So it didn't, yeah, that part didn't bother you?
No, because I'd already caught the League of Assassins thing, so it was already assumed that...
I think I would have been okay with it if you didn't say it.
If he but then wouldn't that have looked just as bad? Okay, just picture the scene. Picture him not saying anything then. He's just looking down. He's like, you never learn to mind your surroundings. And then he opens his cape and
flies
out.
What he says was, Bruce says to him, you've never learned to mind your surroundings. And then he realized that the train's going, that the tracks are gone. And then that's when Rage says to him, so you finally are willing to do what you weren't before, is to kill me. If he just left, right, and said, and didn't say it, because Ra's al Ghul, it leaves it kind of open there, because Ra's al Ghul closes his eyes, and everyone knows that, oh, this guy could come back to life, he's got a Lazarus pit, they never mention it in the movie, but if Bruce or Batman never says, I don't have to save you, I don't know, I think it would just kind of, nobody would have come to that conclusion. It's the fact that he says, I don't have to save you. I'm not going to kill you, but I don't have to save you. That's what makes people question the whole, well, why did they build it up that way? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But that's nitpicking. So overall, where does this movie rank for you?
Out of 10?
Not out of 10. Maybe out of all the other superhero movies. Oh, and just before we go there, I gotta say that that last scene with him and Commissioner Gordon with the Joker flipping the card, love it. Goosebumps. At the end of that film, I was so excited for the next one. I couldn't wait 4 years. So after saying that, where does this movie rank for you out of all of, in this genre of movies?
All the superhero movies. That's a tough question. Okay. Pretty high. Definitely pretty high. Because I would take all of the Batmans over most of the Marvel movies. Just because I like, that's just me personally, I like the more serious, if this could actually happen. So yeah, I would probably take it, like one notch above Guardians of the Galaxy. Because oh, I did really like the Guardians of the Galaxy. That was pretty high up there too. But like, I liked it better than any of the Iron Mans. I still like it better than any of the Captain Americas, Thors, and stuff. So yeah, I'd say it's
so
up
there. Holds up.
Yeah.
After all this time.
Yeah.
Okay.
What about you?
For me, it's my favorite of the trilogy. I know Dark Knight is the best film, the one that should have won the best film.
This is the one
film.
That set it up.
But this is the one that set it up. This is the one that it stays very true to the source material and doesn't cheapen it in any way. It doesn't apologize.
Story wise, this one's the best one too.
I think, yeah, the story-wise, the way everything ties in, and showing the why he is Batman, where he gets all that from, the training, all of that build-up, I think this one really does it more than all the other ones.
Yeah.
And
I'd say the acting and the visuals of The Dark Knight are better, but the story and, like, the general, like, feeling, the... I don't know what to call it. The, like, atmosphere of this movie, I would take, yeah.
But even the visuals of this movie, like, all of the places that they go to, like, when they film all over
but, like,
the world.
Gotham City was a little cheesy in some places.
When like, they show, I think,
the thing, it was, like, CGI.
Yeah, there were some portions of it that were, you could see were CGI, but... When he's in the Narrows, when he's that the first time he encounters Scarecrow, that's all of that is, you feel like you're there. When he's in Tibet or what's supposed to be Tibet, and he's traveling there, it's just so huge,
yeah.
And it's real sets. Like they're not just like a set in England where they pretended all of this. They actually went to those locations.
Yeah.
So and it captures all of that real emotion, that discovery. The discovery in this movie, I think, is more than any of the other superhero movies I've seen, or any movie really. Generally, like you watch the first 40 minutes of this film, and you don't even know if you're watching a Batman movie. I mean, you do because it's called Batman Begins, but nothing about it in that, I don't know, it doesn't have that feel necessarily. It becomes that, but so organically. I don't know. For me, I would rank...
It feels like you're watching an origin, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it holds up, and I like what it adds to the Batman canon. I like what it did for comic book movies.
Yeah.
I think without this one, we wouldn't be where we are today with the movies that are coming out. The way that they did this movie, the way that they stuck
to... I agree with that DC. I don't agree Marvel, but yeah.
I think Marvel still would have done it. But I think the fact that they took certain chances with this movie to stay true to the source material before any other comic book movie, what I'm saying is movies before this, they always tried to make it appeal to a broader audience, hoping that it would, like, let's not stick too close to the source material, hope that people just like it because they know it's Batman or they know it's Superman or whatever. Yeah. But this one is like, let's pull from year one, Long Halloween, all of these books that have a rich storytelling history. And when you watch it, you can see exactly where it's coming from. I like that they did that because I think afterwards, you watch now Captain America, Winter Soldier, and Iron Man, and the Avengers, and you can see that, okay, let's go back to the source material and see what we can really build from and make the viewers who are fans of the comic books be invested in it as well. And I think this movie is like kind of the godfather for that type of movie. Maybe it's just my opinion. So for me, I rank this in the last 15 years of comic book movies. This is my favorite for me. And I love a lot of them, like Captain America, Winter Soldier, Dark Knight. Love them all. Man of Steel. But this one for me is the top of the pile.
Yeah.
And it ages really well, I think. All right.
Cool.
Anything else? Any last remarks?
Swear to me. No.
Daphne J, any final remarks?
Batman's the best!
And then after Batman is Aquaman?
No.
All right.
Fish boy.
Well, thanks for tuning in again. Thanks for listening. We've got our email site that is, or not email, but our email is caveofsolitude@outlook.com. Feel free to email us your suggestions of what you want to hear on the show, what you think of the show, any things that we may have mistakenly quoted that you want to just correct us on, that's fine too. We're happy to receive them. We're on podomatic.com under Cave of Solitude is what you search for, and our website will be up soon as well. Our next episode, should we tell them the next episode what it should be about, or we leave it a surprise? We're going to do a music episode.
Leave it a surprise.
Leave it a surprise. Yeah. All right. So thanks for listening, guys. This is Eric Anthony and...
Jay Seal.
And remember, Daphne J was our introducer this episode. We'll hear more from her in episodes to come. Thanks for listening in to the Cave of Solitude.
Toodle.